Accession number 16722, Captain George Ledger, Reel 13.
Captain Ledger, Reel 13. You arrived at Durban, Captain Ledger. What was the reception like?
The reception was very, very good. We were amazed by the number of people who were on the shore, on the pier. And we were allowed to go off every day and come back at night to sleep. We weren't allowed to stay off board ship. We had to come back every night. But I found that when we got ourselves ready to go onto land, immediately we stepped off the ship onto the land, we were surrounded by people from Durban, the civilians there. And they were making a dash for every one of the troops who came off. And they were taking us away. And eventually we got friendly with one, same couple, same family who used to take us out right throughout the whole week we were there. This happened to lots and lots of us in separate parties. Used to come and break us up and take us around. And used to take us out in the cars and ride up into the country and give us a look around and then bring us back to their homes and give us meals. It wasn't a case of giving us presents at all, they were just looking after us and seeing that we were well catered for and well taken care of and showing the delights of the countryside around Durban.
Why do you feel that you got a reception like this from the South Africans?
Well, to me, I couldn't answer that why we got such a reception. I presume it's because we were going across to fight the Germans, and at that time there were a lot of South African troops who were involved in the same position. In fact, it was mainly South Africans who we eventually relied on for transport. They seemed to be mainly drivers who were driving transport and driving us around the areas. But I can't answer that one, why they made such a fuss of us, apart from saying that they knew that we were going away to fight. And they just wanted to make, I would imagine, that they wanted to make our life a little pleasanter before we actually took part in this war we were going to.
Were many of them of English extraction?
A lot of them were English. People who had gone out there and they liked it so much that they decided to stay. But in my case, my own personal case, there were South Africans. I think they were of Dutch descent, these ones. But they still spoke English is better than what I could speak it. They didn't speak Geordie like I'm speaking. But they certainly looked after you. They knew how to, they knew what you wanted to eat or what you could eat and what you liked. It had that, and it was all there in the house. And whatever you wished to eat, they had there for you.
And it was really after army rations, it must have been quite something.
Oh, it was luxurious. After army rations. But having said army rations, I mean, we had better rations on board ship than what we had when we were training on at home. But this was something really spectacular. I mean, they really set out to make us feel at home in Durban. And there were a lot of tears shed by the same family, because they had a young family with them, and they took us around with them, their children. There were a lot of tears shed when we left them at the end of the week. I had four journeys up around the different parts of the countryside with this particular family I went with. I've never been able to keep in touch with them, of course, because we never had any time to do anything. We had too much on our minds to consider. After we met these people and we thanked them very much for the hospitality we received, well, We were going out to other things. We just couldn't remember everybody we met.
So you stayed there a few days and then you sailed on. That would be the Red Sea. What were the conditions like on board in the climate that you were now in?
The conditions steadily got, well, they had been getting hot as we went down, but as we got around the Cape and left Durban. But I'd just like to say one thing, which is mainly in my mind when we were at Durban, before we left Durban, was when we used to go out for a drink, it was pandemonium. There was always fights. And time after time, we used to come out and used to be crawling along the floor to get away from these, we call them rebels, South African people who were in those various places where we couldn't go, you know. And they used to come into the pubs where we were and just start fights, throwing bottles and chairs and things around.
That was at yourselves?
That was at ourselves, yes. And I remember myself and the three brothers of us, my brother Tom and brother Bob, three sergeants, and we went out together and sit and just have a nice quiet drink, and suddenly the windows came in, chairs are flung around, and we had to crawl on our hands and knees to get past, the only passageway in out. And that was a regular occurrence in the pubs at that time.
And you say this was presumably the nationalists?
Yes, mainly those.
The journey up the Red Sea, as I said, the conditions got worse, you said.
Well, the conditions were such, the humidity, we hadn't really got climatized. And that's why we were all falling over each other to get up on deck all the time. And we spent the best part of our time traveling up there by the Red Sea, up on deck, sleeping up there. But as I said earlier, that after sleeping on deck and you got back again, you were filthy with the soot from the smoking chimneys and things.
It must have been very difficult for just below decks in that heat. Did any people suffer in their health in the time?
There was a lot of health on board ship. There was a hospital on board ship. A lot of people succumbed to the heat. I think on my, to my knowledge, there were about two people that died on our journey. Two people from the regiment. I don't know who they were, but I understand there was two people from the regiment that died on the journey. Whether it had been with the humidity or not, I don't know. It could have been some other cause.
How does the army organise, if for want of a better word, the question of sunburn? What's the army instructions towards protection for sunburn?
In those days, I never heard anything about sun creams and and suntan lotion. You had to keep yourself covered up, and that was stress.
And that was the instruction?
That was the instruction. Whatever you do, keep yourselves covered up. Get your shirt sleeves rolled down. Don't have them roll them down. Wear your topi. I can never remember being abroad during the war having to put suntan lotion on myself, because we just gradually burnt, and we got used to it. But we were when we got into a place called Ismailia, when we arrived in Egypt, we got to Ismailia, we were in tents at the time.
Did you call it Aden on your way up the Red Sea?
Yes, we called it Aden.
And you didn't get off the ship?
We didn't get off the ship at Aden, but I got off the ship coming back. When I went out to India, this was after I finished fighting in the desert. But I was at Aden coming back, which was another tale, this story. But in this Ismailia...
When did you arrive in Egypt, at Ismailia?
It would be the back end of June, around about that, because we stayed what they called acclimatization. We didn't do anything for about 3 or 4 weeks. We were just getting ourselves acclimatized to the heat in the desert, moving around in the tents, keeping under cover, apart from doing the physical training and such like. But we didn't do any very much. Just getting ourselves acclimatized to it.
This was a large transit tented camp, was it?
Very, very large, yes. Ismailia was one of the largest, I think, across that area. I think it was one of the first ones troops would meet travelling up from the Cape before they got into the desert.
Again, was there any problem with health, the Gipo tummy or the cholera?
Oh, there was lots of that went on, yes. Gipo tummy, yes. It was terrible. There was lots and lots of it. It was just a thing we just couldn't cope with. We just had to cope.
But we just how did it affect a person?
Well, it was mainly diarrhea and such like, diarrhea and sickness. But it was just a thing we had to get used with and just accept the fact that through time, as we got used to the heat, that this sort of thing would go away. And that we had to be very, very careful of our sanitation. And that was one of the main things pumped into us. Whatever you do, be careful and careful, very careful. Your cleanliness, your washing facilities, and your eating habits, and your ordinary living habits. Sanitation, well, of course, that just meant that you walked across to a hole dug in the ground to carry out your toilet facilities.
What was your first impressions of Egypt and the Egyptians on arrival?
Well, the first impressions when we got off the ship was to be met with these South Africans, lorry drivers. And they were the ones who got us all into the lorries and took us away, ended up there with Ismailia. But on the way from there, the ship to Ismailia, we met lots of Egyptian civilians. And to me, our first thought was just a lot of poverty and people who didn't know where they were going or what they were actually doing there. They seemed to be just wandering aimlessly around. Until such time as we became aware of the nature of the country, and that was how they lived. Then we realised that they weren't homeless, and they weren't wandering around, they were actually living. We thought it was rather funny and peculiar. But this is just just life. We went to a strange country, which we hadn't been used to expect. We didn't know what to expect. And we came to the wrong ideas many times. When people, we used to think we were wandering aimlessly around. We were living off the land and such like, and finding food and such like for to keep the families and different jobs they had, which we weren't aware the nature of.
What were the facilities in the transit camp like?
Well, once we got settled in on the transit camps at Ismailia, we then established ourselves in the same position as we were in this country. We had our own the RQMS, Regiment of Quartermaster Sergeant, and then the storekeepers. We had our own cookhouse going, and they used to provide the feeding arrangements for us. The facilities was more or less the same as we have in this country out there. Apart from the fact that there was this intense heat which seemed to create havoc amongst us. You might be feeling hungry, and then eventually you found when you were getting your grub, you just couldn't eat it because you were exhausted at times. For the want of a better word, exhausted is not the word, but you just felt that you couldn't eat anything. And there again, with the food, they had to be very, very careful with the sanitation and cleanliness, because the amount of flies, everything you looked and touched was flies. Everything had to be covered up.
This would be your first experience of the fly situation, the fly problem.
Oh, yes.
How did you cope with it?
It was just a matter of getting used to them and just accepting the fact that they were there. And we didn't have any real method of coping at all. We just flapped our hands around and our arms and just like, And we got tired of doing that, and eventually it just came to the time when you just let them crawl around your face, and now and then you would knock it off. But I found that the more you sweat, the more flies you got.
You weren't there very long. Where did you go to next?
We didn't spend a great deal of time in Ismailia. We were only there to get acclimatized. And then we understand that we were sent across to Cyprus. We were taken across to Cyprus at midnight one night, going across to Port Said, from Port Said.
Do you remember the journey?
Yes.
What was it like?
It was at midnight when we embarked, and it had to be very, very swift. There was pandemonium getting the whole battalion on board these ships, because the Germans were right up against the war, and we had to make a dash from Egypt across to Cyprus as quickly and quickly as we possibly could. And it was midnight when we set out, pitch dark.
What kind of ship did you travel on?
It seemed to be one of these destroyers. We had a destroyer. There was more than one, of course, because there's quite a lot of us. But the ship I was on was a destroyer. And we were just bundled into the place. Everything was through in, everything was in a rush, rush, rush. And we hadn't to move once we got inside and got ourselves laying down, sat down, all our equipment and pushed on with us. And we hadn't to move when we got across to Egypt. No.
To Cyprus.
To Cyprus, rather. And the place we arrived at in Cyprus is a place called Famagusta. And there again, when we got off in Cyprus, we seemed to be caught up with these South African lorry drivers again. For some reason or another, I called them South African lorry drivers. It's big, they seem to be very big, made fellas. And we loaded onto the lorries and then carried it, taken across from Famagusta, across to Nicosia. And we found ourselves that we had been sent across to Cyprus to safeguard Nicosia Airport. And when we arrived at Nicosia Airport, we were in tents. And that's where we lived, in tents on the boundary of the airport. And we spent many weeks, well, we were there for 4 months actually, digging trenches right around the perimeter of the airport. And these trenches, after we had dug them, we were digging them out of solid rock, and they had to be blasted out. We were using drills, windy drills, and gunpowder to blast them. It was solid rock, it was. And after we got them dug out, we had Egyptian bricklayers came, and they bricked them all out. So they were like a perfect building, like a building a house. All bricked up inside, the trench sides, and then the stand-up points, observation points, all bricked. And when those were bricked up, it was a beautiful sight to see them finished. All the brickwork was beautiful in lines. And we finished off by putting wood timbers across the top, covering them with corrugated sheeting, and then about 12 inches to 18 inches depth of soil covered with grass, covering the top of the grass, so that it could stand on your firing base, stand up on your firing base, and see the surrounding parts of the airport, looking outwards from the airport. And
were these like kind of First World War type trenches? Were they linked up one long line of them?
These were exactly like the First World War trenches. Only in the First World War there weren't built with bricks and things. These were built and finished off properly by bricklayers. It was a wonderful job to see them finished. After we dug them, and it just looked like a lot of rubbish, rough trenches where we. But when the bricklayers got finished, beautifully lined inside, and not only were there standing bays, firing bays there, there were kitchens. It's just like if I had to stay down below, there were kitchens and rooms dug out where people could lie down and cook meals and sleep. And to this day, I think they're still there, unless they filled them in. But those type of trenches, I think they could still be left the way they were.
Were you still with A Company?
I was with A Company the whole time. All of my time with the 8th Battalion was A Company.
So
and
what
I was
time,
with
what
the
time?
Same platoon, 8th Platoon.
What time did your day start?
Our day started at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Was that a stand two?
That was a stand two. But apart from the stand two, that was when you said ask for the day starting. We started at 6 o'clock in the morning. That was time we did our physical training. Every morning we did physical training at 6 o'clock. But there had been stand twos right throughout the period, 24 hours of stand two, because the Germans at that time were on the island of Crete. And every now and again, planes would come across and drop a bomb on Nicosia Airport. And we could see these little bits of fights up above us now and again. Not a lot, not to show it while we were there, but we were only there 4 months, but we saw some of it happening. When we first went to Cyprus, we understood that we were the beginning of an invasion force was going to go up through Greece to attack through there. Now, apparently it was true, the fact was true, but it had changed their minds at the last moment. And they decided to send us after 4 months from Cyprus across to Palestine on our way.
Can we spend a bit more time in Cyprus?
Yeah,
Your day started at 6 o'clock. And you had your PTA, obviously the coolest part of the day. What would you probably do next?
Well, in Cyprus itself, we were doing more or less the same as we did in this country. Training, physical training, 6 o'clock in the morning, get up, physical training, that out on route marches, and training on around the various villages, on the outskirts of the perimeter of the airport. We went away from the airport at times and left the airport guarded with other troops, but a lot of us went and did our training as we normally trained. Training for war, taking part in actions such as frontal advances and travelling in single line, extended order and such like. Just the main type of training which we had done previously in this country.
Did you have a midday meal?
A midday meal, yes. We had
major midday meal.
Yes, the meals were the same as we had in this country across there. But there again, we were living in tents on that short time. It was just a matter of just going to there's a special area for the cookhouse. We didn't eat down in the trenches we had dug. We just left those trenches for a reason of being, if we were invaded or attacked, we had somewhere to go to repulse them. And we just used these tents for to live in and have our cooking facilities seen to there.
Afternoons, what would you do?
Afternoons, we were just getting ourselves covered up and getting out of the sun. Mainly it was, in my case, it was mainly reading these manuals. I don't know why, I seem to be involved with reading manuals all the time, in my spare time. About war, the methods of war and the equipment which we use and just like all that. I used to read a lot on man control and just like, you know, being a lance corporal, a corporal and a sergeant, I used to read a lot of got a lot of information from these pamphlets. Because when you're in a position of authority like that, although you're all working class people, as the saying is, and you're all friends together, somebody had to lead them, and somebody had to be in a position of knowledge and how to lead them properly. You know, you just can't go and say, do that, if they knew it was wrong. And I used to delve into these books. That's what I spent a lot of my time.
What you were reading was very relevant to what you were doing.
It was Everything I read on these pamphlets was relevant with what we were doing. Anything to do with the war. And I just seemed to be infected with it. Once I started reading, I couldn't put it down. As it turned out, it seemed to come. It turned out to be a big help to me, because I don't know whether it was the fact that I was always reading these books, or whether what I'd been reading I was putting into effect, into actual use, was that the people above me seemed to take notice of what I'd been doing. And it was in Cyprus that the brigade major, the battalion commander, second command rather, Major McLaren, came across to me. I had been out on patrol with my section, my platoon, outside the air, and I was coming back to the airport, and I was making a mock attack. We were nearly finished, but we were making a mock attack on our own positions. We had dug the own trenches. And I had them all extended out, and we were charging in. And standing up ahead of us was the second in command of the battalion, Major McLaren. And when we finished with the attack and we all assembled together, Major McLaren came across to me and he said, "I'd like to see you for a moment, Sergeant." I says, "Yes, sir." I says, "I'll be about 5 minutes. I just want to get the men together." He says, "I realise that." He says, "I'll just be across here." And he left me about 10 minutes or so. I was getting the chaps settled down again after the exercise. I went and saw Major McLaren, and he said, "I've really come across to see you, not to see the men." I said, "It was you I've been come to see, because I have to take you to see Colonel Beard." And I thought I'd done something wrong. I says, "What have I done wrong now?" He said, "Oh no, don't get worried." He says, "I have to take you to Colonel Beard." He says, "The Colonel will tell you what he wants to see you about." Of course, he knew. And here, when he took me, I went straight across with him to the colonel's tent. He had a tent. It wasn't in quarters, I think. He was living the same as we were. And the battalion second command took me in to see him. And he said, "Oh, come in, Ledger." He says, "I'm pleased to see you." And he asked how I was getting on, how I was managing myself with the troops and the airport. And he says, he just come out of the blue, he says, "What would you say if I asked you to take a commission?" And I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. I says, "I beg your pardon, sir." He says, "Well," he says, if we decided to send you to college somewhere to have some training to be an emergency commissioned officer, how would you feel about that?" And I was still taken rather aback, because I was just a working lad, you know. And then I realised I had to give him an answer, and I says, I pulled myself together quickly. And I said, "Well, if you think I'm well enough, or you feel that I'm capable enough to go to college and come through this," I says, "I'll give it a try." I says, "I'll do my best to get through it." "Well," he says, "just sign this paper," and he had it all ready. And I just signed the agreement that I was prepared to go. He said, "Well, just leave it with us, and we'll get in touch with you again when things are ready." So I just returned to me own unit, just a same airport, you know, and I just returned to my own platoon.
Did you tell your men and your brothers what had happened?
No, not immediately. I never told them at all in Cyprus what had happened. But it was after I'd been in Cyprus for about 4 months. But before that, I went back to my platoon, leaving the colonel, and then the colonel came back to me about 2 or 3 days after that. He said, "I'm going to take you through to Nicosia, into the town." He says, I want you to meet the Brigadier General who's in charge of us, you know. And he wants to meet you before we send you on this course, this officer's training course. So I went and met this Brigadier General in Nicosia itself. And he said, well, good luck, Sergeant. He says, I'm sure that we've got the right sort of chap for to go on this course. He says, good luck to you. He says, and I wish you all the best. That's